wish and I wish and I wish and I wish and I wish and on me. Yeah. I've been moving calm, don't start no trouble with me. Trying to keep it peaceful is a struggle for me.
And welcome back to the Greg Herenda Show. Where Kenny, is this a young guy's song or a middle-aged? What was the deal with Jay Will? Drake is for the hip-hop dudes or the middle hip-hop?
It's for today, man.
It is today?
That guy's bigger than anybody.
It's been around for anyway.
The album that this was on, just about every song went to the top of the charts.
We tried to play another song, but we couldn't do it. But we are with a young man and a coach that Kenny, that no other coach on the show has ever been, and that's undefeated. We have the undefeated men's baseball coach, Justin McKay of the Fairleigh Dickinson University Knights, on the Greg Herenda Show. Justin, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'll tell you one thing. He might sound humble, but I'll tell you one thing. This is going to be the only time in your career, now I might be wrong, but I'm going to go on a limb, that you're undefeated, undefeated on a radio show. And the way you started your career, I had to pay my dues here. My third year, we got it going. But my first year, my first win was Rutgers at Rutgers. Second win was Seton Hall at Seton Hall. And here you are, your very first win. You pop the Pirates in a 6-5 walk-off fashion. Just tell me how that felt to be the head coach of a Division I program and popping a Big East school that has had many, many professional players, tremendous history. Tell me how you felt after that first W, Justin.
Yeah, I mean, I could try to play it cool, but that would be a lie. It was an absolute, you know, dream come true to just handing in the lineup, you know, let alone the game.
Yes.
It was just a dream come true for me because I've always just wanted to be a Division I head baseball coach because, you know, the aspect of being able to recruit, being able to, player develop, you know, and then schedule and pick your schedule. So, you know, when you go to pro ball, you pick one or the other, and that's what you do. So it was a dream come true, and the opponent, you know, I think somebody tried to look back the last time we beat them, people couldn't find it. So I know it'd been at least 10 straight, and so, you know, we appreciated the opportunity to play them and win.
Like what's amazing, really, is that you dreamt to be a head Division I baseball coach, but I guarantee you, I could be wrong, that you dreamt to be a professional baseball player at one point in time. I'm going to ask you a hard question right off the bat. When was the moment that you realized that you could not be a professional baseball player, and then you kind of morphed and said, you know what, if I can't play it for a living, I want to coach it for a living? Do you remember that moment or that period in your life?
Yeah, there was actually two times that. So I started my high school, my first 2 years were in California, the Bay Area, and I played nothing but baseball, and I played about 125 games. And then I got moved in the middle of my high school year to Albany, New York, and played at 18.
Wait a minute. Yeah. You moved from the Bay Area of California to Albany?
Yeah.
Was that your father in a job?
Yeah, you moved out there and during the Silicon Valley era, and then things
was shifted. That a culture shock or what?
Yeah, I mean, going out there was a culture shock, to start, and then because I had come from Albany before that.
Gotcha.
You know, I lived in six states in another country before, so I've been moving around.
Very cool.
So, you know, when I returned to Albany, and we had 18-game high school season, and we played most of our games with snow on the side, I thought that would be very difficult for me to, as a position player, and then in college, you know, I broke my, you know, I cracked my back, I fractured my back my sophomore summer, and I missed 18 months. So I knew when I came back, you know, I was a middle lineup guy, I had some power. When I came back, it was not the same. So I knew then, you know, it wasn't going to happen.
When did you realize then that you had an affinity and ability to teach, recruit, and coach? When did that? Was that I don't want to get into Gary yet, okay, Puccio, but was it prior to Pooch, post Pooch, or during Pooch?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be dead honest with you. I used to beg my father to coach my little league team so I could make the lineup. you know, and that was my favorite thing. I'd be, and I got a story for you. When I was in third grade, I was in math class. Sixth grade, I was in math class, and
yep.
And I always did well, and so I tried to finish early. And what I did is I created a book of every single MLB lineup,
yes.
how I saw it. And my teacher came up from behind me one time and took it, and then he called me after class, and I thought that I thought I was going to be in trouble.
Yes.
And he asked me, he said, "Why'd you bat Chipper Jones second?"
I love it.
So I've always loved it. I've always wanted.
And why did you put Chipper Jones second? Who'd you have in the leadoff spot?
The leadoff spot, I think it was Edgar Renteria at the time.
Okay.
And then Javier Lopez was batting behind him. I just thought that over the number of at-bats, moving him from the three to the two hole gave him more opportunities.
I love it. Let's talk baseball, man, because, you know, if you're an American boy, an American man, and especially if you're my age, which is much older than you, there's a love of the game that just starts, with your father and my father as well, and my grandfather. I don't know if you know this, Justin. My grandfather was a tremendous – he played semi-pro baseball. I have a picture of my grandfather playing baseball with Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig.
Wow.
And my Uncle Tony was – so I had some tremendous baseball roots in my upbringing, and it's like – God, like it's where it starts, you know. And like, were you playing baseball when you were a 2-3-4 year old kid, or when did you start?
Yeah, well, I mean, that probably explains why you're such a strong supporter of our baseball program, because it's in your roots.
Oh, I love it. We appreciate that.
But yeah, it started early for me when I was four. I think I played my first organized baseball when I was 4 years old. I think I played with six year olds. So yeah, it's just something that. And then I moved around so much when I was younger. You'll remember this. TBS always used to play the Braves. And
yes.
So you could watch baseball.
No matter where you were.
No matter where
so
I was.
So you're a Brave fan.
So I just love the way they played. I grew up
right.
in St. Louis. I spent most of my time growing up in St. Louis. So I'm a big Cardinals fan. Ozzie Smith
Huge.
And Ray Langford and Tom Pagnot. You know, so. Oh. But I could always watch the Braves, and the style that they played that back then could
right.
teach you a lot. It really
yes.
could teach you a lot about the game. And
I learned how to hate them when I was watching, because I was a Met fan, and the Chipper Jones Met relationship, and they won so many East. I don't want to say East Coast. What's the name of the Major League
Eastern Division?
Yeah. They won divisional championship upon divisional championship. But so you were like a vagabond, man. You were all over the country. What country did you live in other than the United States?
Saudi Arabia.
Stop.
Yeah. Yeah,
only
years.
On the Greg Herenda show, because I did not know this.
Yeah, man.
What did your father do over there? Buy and sell oil?
He was in AT&T when they were on the rise, setting up like wireless networks and stuff. So
okay.
back then they would go there for a year and a half projects. And
yes.
Then, you know.
Did you play baseball in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, in the American compound.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so there were other American kids?
Yeah, yeah.
Did any Saudis play as well, or did they have any idea of how to play?
Yeah, no, there was. I mean, there was, you know, there was certain Saudis that lived within the compound, but I mean, it was pretty, you know, pretty confined compound.
Right, right, there. Right.
We had our own little league within the compound, but I mean, you talk
about these are cool.
These are massive compounds.
I can only imagine how many people would be in a compound. You wouldn't know.
I wish
now.
I could. Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah. Know, yeah.
So let's just go through the whole – so you're a young boy, you're into baseball, you go all over the place, you like the St. Louis Cardinals, you like the Atlanta Braves, and then you meet the man, okay? We just got to get to the crux of this. You meet Gary Puccio. I want to know the first phone call, the first letter, the genesis of your relationship with Coach Gary Puccio, please.
Yeah, so I went to Briarcliff College out of high school.
Yep.
You know, you can imagine you're in California for 2 years, then you get shifted over.
Right.
You know, so I, in Division I's, and so I went to a Division I junior college called Briarcliff College, and we had we played our freshman year, and then the university switched us from being a Division I junior college to being a four-year institution. So our current head coach quit.
Gotcha.
And
gotcha.
Coach Puccio came in just prior to
the season.
Oh, so
you were at Briarcliff before Gary.
Right, and then
gotcha.
And then about a couple of weeks before the season started, our guy quit because, you know, it was a big down. And,
yep.
and he came in, and my first interaction with him was a team meeting, and that thing, you know him, man. He laid it down. He laid it down,
What were your first – now, you got to be honest, because we know your relationship has evolved and gone to, like, a really extraordinary level. What was your first – gut feeling when Gary walked in the room and this was going to be your manager? Give it to me, man. Be honest.
I mean, I'll be totally honest. Yeah. And what we had come from, what we had just had.
Right.
I was really excited. Honestly, we had a really talented team.
Yeah.
That achieved nothing. Well, we underachieved the year before.
Right.
And we needed structure, and we needed to get our stuff cleaned up. And
love it.
And that's what he came in and did. And to me, all I ever cared about was winning. So
yes,
that was there. You know, that's the honest truth. That. You know, I was extreme. I mean, I think I met with him a couple of days after he was here after Pratt, and you know,
right.
I knew exactly.
That
he
was
knew
it.
He knew what he was doing. Yeah.
Now,
I was his
correct
captain.
Me if I'm wrong. Who comes to FDU first? Do you come to? Does Gary come and brings you, or how does that work? And how does the family stay intact from Briarcliff? Here at Fairleigh Dickinson University.
Yeah, so we won our second USCA national championship my first year coaching with him there at Briarcliff. We had won the first one when I was a player for him. I was his captain in 2006. And so we had won our second championship, which helped him, you know, when he was interviewing here. So he was offered the position here. I was offered the head coach of
So he won two national championships and then got this job.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you played for one and coached with one.
Yep.
So you guys, okay, I got you.
Yeah, and that was the first two in the school history too, by the way.
Yes.
So, you know, he achieved, and when he came here, he got the job, and I was offered the head job at Briarcliff, and I was offered to come with him here. And, man, that was a tough decision for a 24-year-old.
Yes.
You know, be a head coach, try to be a guy, or go to Division I. And I've always just wanted the biggest challenge. And with it, you know, speaking with him and everything, and
right,
I made a decision to come.
And so you were his assistant at Fairleigh Dickinson the first year that he was here.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh yeah. From day one, we were.
You were boys.
Yeah.
Now you're like every assistant that I've had has their kind of expertise, their niche, and yours is offense. Okay.
Yeah.
Give me your philosophy, your offensive philosophy in a nutshell to the many FDU basketball, baseball, FDU fans that are listening this morning. Give me what you think about when you think of offensive baseball, Justin.
Yeah, I'll try to sum it up.
I mean,
it's we never want the defense to be comfortable.
Gotcha.
So I guess if I could explain it like that, we're aggressive.
Yes.
But we just never, you know, there's aggressive, there's smart aggressive, you know, you could say that. But the
right.
bottom line is I don't ever want to look at that defense and think that they're comfortable in what they're doing. So we're going to look to disrupt that somehow, some way, whether it be, you know, aggressive, bunt, whatever, West Coast style.
I love it.
You know,
I love it.
Again, I have West Coast style baseball in my roots. So, you know, we bring that here.
You're putting pressure on the defense. So you bunt. Like, I don't see a lot of bunting in college baseball. Did Gary bunt a lot or no?
Well, I mean, you know, we got it transitioned from him making calls to me making the calls. So,
right.
you know, one thing is stealing bases too. I mean, we finished seventh in the nation 3 years ago in stolen bases. Last year was 15th, or 2 years ago was 15th. You know, so we've been one of the top. But it's even just, you know, a lot of kids will take a lot of pitches and just,
right.
you know, and we'll bunt when we have to, when
right.
it's there, but we're not going to let the defense play deep on us. We want to bring them in tight,
bring
which
them
makes
in.
Them uncomfortable when guys are hitting the balls hard.
Yep.
So it's not like we're like a bunting offense. We just,
right.
we
but
see
you,
something and we try to go.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I watched a documentary the other day, and you're too young to have watched the games, but you talk about the West Coast and the Bay Area. When Billy Martin was a coach. Now, you talk about some people, and Tony La Russa has been quoted as saying he's the best manager, in-game baseball manager in the history of the game.
Yeah.
Put a lot of pressure, played really fast, Billy Ball. Do you look back? What do you know about Billy Ball? Can we make a comparison between Billy Ball and Justin Ball? Or is that
I know nothing about – You know, to
Billy Martin.
I mean, I know who he is.
Oh.
I know stories, but I mean, I didn't bear
man.
Down.
Yo,
on him, man.
Dude,
I was a Joe Torre era.
Dude, I know Red Auerbach.
Yeah,
I know the Celtic fast break. Dude,
yeah.
You've got to watch this documentary. Billy Martin off the field played obviously. Yeah, rest in peace. Played too fast, but his teams. He took the Oakland A's. He took the Texas Rangers. He took the New York Yankees. And they just played incredible baseball. And it sounds like, to me, you want to be aggressive, put pressure on the defense, Tell me about your players. Do you have the players to do that this year? It looks like right off the bat. I mean, you tie Dayton, you beat Seton Hall. You have to have players, and I know you got a bunch of freshmen. Well, I can't wait to see. But tell me about your players.
Yeah, I don't want to short the players here. I mean, we've led the conference in home runs as well. We've led the conference in hitting. We led the conference in a significant amount of offensive stats. So
sure.
It's not like we're just like this
Punch and Judy
yeah,
team.
Yeah, we're not that. We've been at the top of the home runs, extra base hits. We had three of the top seven batting averages, including the first three. 3 years ago. So we've had, So, yeah, I mean, in the players we have right now, I mean, I think this team, I have a lot of expectations, but I appreciate this team the way they are.
What do you like most about them?
The way they compete every day.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking about just practice, too.
I saw you guys running about a week ago.
Yeah.
And you just looked, you didn't look ridiculously fast, but you ran hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you have a bunch of kids that, since I've been here, I've just always had a relationship with 5, 6, 1, 2. This year, I think I got a relationship with a bunch of dudes. They're just good people. You bring in, you and Gary both, we have to give credit where credit is due, but you're the recruiting coach. They're good kids that seem to me are brought up well, respectful, they're good students. They don't want for anything because they just know the deal. They're like, where we have full athletic scholarships, you guys don't.
Yeah.
And I think a part of that is, like, guess what, man? They understand and respect what they have, and they're not wanting things. I love your team before they get on the diamond. So, but on the diamond, like, I love your catcher.
Yeah,
like, you look at him, and that's a winner. And he could have played in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, or today. The kid, is it Evan McDonald?
Evan McDonald, yeah.
Evan
Captain.
McDonald, I mean, I remember him on his recruiting visit.
Yeah.
From Ohio, you know? And then my boy from Philly, from day one, I told Pooch, that's my guy.
Yeah, Romano.
Romano can just lick it, stick it. He just hits
it. He's one of those dudes that you'll go in the alley with.
Oh, in a heartbeat.
Both of them are, though. Both of them.
No, those. Yeah. And I gravitate to players, and it doesn't matter what sport. You just know greatness.
Yeah.
And I think those two guys, are they your leaders?
Oh, yeah, and there's two other great leaders, Dylan Forsythe and James Donald, and the combination of those four.
There you go.
And they all have different things. They all have different contributions to the team. Evan and Bobby are the main players. But James and Dylan are significant glue. So.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like Elijah Williams on our team comes off the bench from Evanston, Illinois.
Yeah.
Kenny, he's on the white team every day before we play a game, meaning this week we're playing Mount St. Mary's and Central. He's replicating those guys, plays just as hard as a white team member as he does. Then we put him in the starting. That's invaluable stuff.
No,
if you make the scout team better, you're better, and people don't, Justin, but people out there just think, okay, who's scoring the points? If Holloway had 35 or McDonald had 3 home runs, but there's so much more to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly why I made James and Dylan captains, to send the message to the team that it's not all about the statistics. You're not who you are as a person is not gauged by what you've done on the field, and Dylan and James are those guys. And the other thing, too, with Elijah is having the self-awareness how important it is to the team.
Yes.
James and Dylan and all of our – they have the self-awareness to know what their role is and how important it is to be successful, and which I'm sure Elijah, understands as well.
Oliver Tavares. We can't go without talking about Oliver, who I don't – the word is not tragic because it ended incredibly well, but Oliver went down. For the people out there that don't know or maybe just heard, he was literally in Dickinson Hall, Kenny, and went down and coded, and his heart stopped.
Yeah, 18 minutes.
For 18 minutes.
Yeah, cardiac arrest. And about the ambulance didn't leave the campus for 40 minutes because they can't move until they get something. So that was that was another thing, and then it was about 2.5 hours at the hospital until they finally got him, inducing the coma.
I mean, You're a first-year head coach, and that happens. How do you react to that?
I mean, look, and I love my guys. I mean, I recruit all these guys.
Sure.
There's relationships that started well before they got here, so it's not like, you know, it's been a one-year thing. You know, this has been years that you know, and yeah, I mean, it absolutely was a new role because as assistant, you may be able to get away with displaying some feelings a certain way, and as a head coach, you know, I got thrown in there, and I had to respond in a certain way. And, you know, I spent every day there 2 to 3 times a day with him and his parents. And that dude's strong, and you know, he's here.
Really strong.
He's here, man.
Give us a thumbnail update. How is he doing? You know, we've had him. He was the honorary captain at one of our games, which he'll never do again.
Yeah.
Because we played St. Francis and got our doors blown off.
Yeah.
So he knows that.
Yeah.
But Tell me about how he's feeling today and his update for our fans and listeners.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way I could describe to you how much, and I'm not just saying this because this dude loves baseball. I'm telling you,
this dude,
he loves baseball.
I love it.
His whole life is baseball. So, you know, this is concerning for him as far as, you know, and he loves his teammates. He really is that guy. I mean, he's a rookie our year.
Oh,
you know, he was a rookie of the year last year without, you know, before this ever happened. He was a starting shortstop. So you were talking about on the field, too. He was starting shortstop.
And he's a good-sized kid.
Very big.
His parents, Kenny, are just state-of-the-art people.
Yeah. So
when is he going to play baseball? Is there any kind of prognosis about when he can play baseball again?
I mean, look, I'm going to tell you right now, that dude's going to be back in a
Knights
uniform next year.
I love it.
He will be back. He will be back.
Justin, before we go, and the 30-second clock is starting to tick, give me your upcoming game. I know you were going to go on the road and you got rained out in South Carolina. What's up next? We're going to air this Sunday morning. What's up from Monday on for the Knights?
Yeah, so this Thursday we'll leave for North Carolina.
That's okay. Yeah, so we're taping, so you're leaving tomorrow.
Right.
You're going to be in.
Right. We'll leave on Thursday. We'll go down.
Tell me the teams you're playing.
USA Baseball Complex. We'll play Army, Dartmouth, and St. Joe's, and then we'll be back that Sunday, and then the following week on Friday we fly out to L.A. Our first West Coast trip that we can find for our baseball program.
Who are you playing in L.A.? My brother's out there.
We got 4 games in CSU.
He's there. Who are you playing?
CSU's Bakersfield.
Bakersfield. I know that's in the middle of nowhere, bro.
Yeah. There's a former basketball player that's assistant coach at CSU's Bakersfield right now, Scott.
Okay.
Point guard Scott. He was a former guy. So we play 4 games.
Bakersfield.
There.
Who else?
And then we get Tuesday off. So I'm going to take them to Venice Beach, you know, let these guys see L.A. a little bit,
So you're going back to Cali.
Cali, man.
That's the song we got, but you're going back to Cali.
Yeah.
Hey, Justin, man, listen, so happy for number one. I know you were picked. We were picked 9th.
We were picked last.
When we went to the NCAA tournament, you're picked last. That's the perfect spot to be in
go.
As a new head coach. I love your team. I love the kids. I can't wait to see Justin Ball. I wish you all the luck, and we'll be out there. You know that.
You too,
I really appreciate you coming on the Greg Herenda Show today.
Thank you for having me.
You're the best. And we'll be back with more of the Greg Herenda Show after this.
Hey, this is Justin McKay. I'm the head baseball coach at Fairleigh Dickinson University, and you are listening to the Greg Herenda Show at WFDU.